This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Boston Marathon bomber sentenced to death and breaks his silence. New allegations of U.S. spying. Drought-stricken California gets some big advice.
We thought, given California's water situation, we're in a very serious drought, and Israel's advanced technology in this area, this would be the perfect sister city event to plan.
Musical competitors put aside differences to produce a brand new album. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was formally sentenced to death for the bloody 2013 attack that killed three people and wounded 264 others. The U.S. federal judge officially imposed the death sentence Wednesday on Tsarnaev that had been recommended unanimously by a 12-person jury last month. Tsarnaev spoke publicly before the sentencing and apologized to the victims and survivors of the attack. It was the first time he spoke in court. VOA Russian service reporter Fatima Tsaltsova was there and talked about the reaction with VOA's Michael Lippin.
Inside the courtroom, there was a deep, deep silence while Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was speaking. There was emotion, though. You could see it on the faces of the victims. Everybody who was in the courtroom was moved, even when after Dzhokhar Tsarnaev finished, Judge O'Toole started speaking, and his voice was breaking several times. He needed to stop and then continue because his voice was obviously breaking. So there was an emotion inside the courtroom.
And does that emotion mean that the people in the courtroom were persuaded or convinced by what Tsarnaev was saying?
I can't say how much they were convinced, but it can be only an observation or even an opinion that it was a much-needed apology because several victims this morning called upon Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, trying to convince him that this is going to be his last chance to show remorse, to apologize, to ask for forgiveness, and he did use that chance, actually. So I think for the victims, it was important to hear his apology, finally. It was a very, very important point for them.
Of course, the death sentence was not a surprise because the jury had decided earlier that he should be sentenced to death. But what I'd like to know is, what are the chances that Tsarnaev will appeal this death sentence?
Well, at the end, actually, after Tsarnaev finished his speech, he actually spoke in a very good English, but a distinct Chechen accent. He was very polite. He referred to Allah a lot. After he finished, his lawyer, Judy Clark, she asked the judge about the proceedings for the appeal. So I guess they will be going to appeal, but we don't know for sure yet. There was no statement.
VOA's Fatima Tsaltsova in Boston. Social media is saying a lot about the developments in the Boston bombing trial. Michael Lippin is here with an update. Michael?
Yes, Ray, the convicted bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was back in the Twitter spotlight. The hashtag of his last name was the most common hashtag that people were using to tweet about the case. The Topsy Analytics website shows that the Tsarnaev hashtag has been tweeted at least 30,000 times in the past day. Some other hashtags that people have been using include hashtag Boston Bombing and hashtag Boston Strong, which is a slogan that many Americans used in the aftermath of the attack to show their solidarity with the city. Now, as I was looking through some of the hashtag Tsarnaev tweets, I found some noteworthy ones, including one by Jim Armstrong, a reporter for Boston CBS TV affiliate WBZ. Using his handle at JimArmstrongWBZ, he tweeted a composite image of courtroom sketches of Tsarnaev by artist Jane Rosenberg. This was a court session in which cameras were not allowed, so that's why we have the sketches. And in those sketches, Tsarnaev appears rather downbeat, with his head lowered, and that kind of matches what witnesses said about his rather forlorn demeanor during the hearing. Another tweet that I found comes from British military veteran, activist, and author Harry Leslie Smith, whose handle is at Harry's Last Stand. Smith tweeted, "America has to call it for what it is, because executing Tsarnaev for the Boston bombing isn't justice, it's blood revenge." Now, the judge in the case didn't say the death sentence is revenge, but rather said it is justice for what he called the evil that Tsarnaev had done.
Michael, the U.S. attorney who prosecuted the case also sparked some controversy online. And what did she say?
Yes, the U.S. attorney for Massachusetts, Carmen Ortiz, said after the sentencing that the bombing was a crime of terrorism, a crime that was not religiously motivated, and a crime that was intended to coerce and intimidate the United States. While some conservative American activists took issue with that contention that the bombing did not have a religious motivation, Tennessee activist Jen, who has the Twitter handle at TN_smartgirl, said this, "Really? A crime that was not religiously motivated? Can we please get our heads out of the sand?" Well, Ortiz later said that she believes Tsarnaev had a skewed view of Islam and said that skewed view is a radical ideology that is not at the heart of what is a truly peaceful and loving religion. Ray?
VOA's Michael Lippin. You can follow him on Twitter. His handle is at Michael_Lippin. That's L-I-P-I-N. Terrorism and violent ideologies are rampant around the world. Finding ways to end it are virtually impossible, but that is not stopping people from working on a solution. Some women are defying the extremists and trying to educate their countries. As we hear from VOA's Catherine Gibson, there is a program giving women an opportunity to share ideas with each other.
Maya Yamut from Lebanon has seen the root causes of terrorism. She says there is only one solution.
Awareness not to join such groups. It is fake. It is not true. It is illusion. They said it's like a Disneyland. It's a horrible land. It's not fun at all. Only sick people go there. Just sick people.
Maya is taking part in a State Department project bringing together lawyers and bloggers, activists and researchers, each woman working in her own way to counter violent extremism. They're meeting for 2 weeks to share ideas and develop new strategies here in the United States. The fight against violent extremism is particularly important for women, says Palestinian researcher Nadia Nusaba.
If women are moderate enough, educated enough, tolerated enough, we can make sure at least that the fight of extremism is being beaten down at home. And at the same time, the woman has that power of love. If you love your son, your husband, your father, you can that power of love that a woman can give, I think, can really defeat lots of enemies. On top of them is this fight of extremism.
In Bangladesh, where a blogger was hacked to death for criticizing religious extremism, Priyanka Kanta says respect for other religions is the path away from extremism.
The toughest thing to do in Bangladesh is to establish a secular country. And here we mean secularism is not atheism, rather being respectful to other religion. You can perform all your religious duties, but please don't hurt the people who are from other religion.
In a world where social media can spread violence in a second, connections like these can make a difference. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA's International Edition. Still ahead, the issue of race rearing its head in the 2016 presidential election.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
France is sending its intelligence coordinator to Washington following allegations with a whistleblowing website WikiLeaks that the United States spied on France's last three leaders. WikiLeaks documents showed the U.S. National Security Agency spied on former French Presidents Jacques Chirac and Nicolas Sarkozy and current President François Hollande from 2006 to 2012. President Hollande said he phoned President Obama Wednesday to discuss the eavesdropping allegations and that Mr. Obama repeated promises to stop spying tactics considered unacceptable between allies. VOA's Sarah Williams spoke with Dominique Moissy, the senior advisor to the French Institute for International Relations in Paris.
Well, not surprised, because we knew, given the fact that Chancellor Angela Merkel was listened to, that the French presidents also were of interest for the NSA, but at the same time, a sense of shock and displeasure. This is not a way to treat an ally. And so, yes, a feeling of what's gone wrong with America, what has happened to a system that seems to be escaping any diplomatic common sense. You don't want to show your ally that you distrust them so much that you want to make sure that you know whatever they be saying.
Well, and France is not just any U.S. ally. It is the U.S.'s oldest ally and aided the U.S. during its War of Independence.
Yes, and also right now, for many people in Washington, France has replaced the United Kingdom as the deputy sheriff of America when it comes to security and military intervention.
Have there been concerns, because as you mentioned, there was accusations against eavesdropping in regard to German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Have relations between France and Germany been impacted because of these allegations?
Well, these allegations do not create, I repeat, a warm climate of friendship between close allies who need each other. And you don't want to treat Paris or Berlin as they are treated by Moscow, or as you yourself treat Moscow. So somewhere, something went wrong in the decision-making process in Washington. Who gave the order? Who checked? Who decided? And it would be very interesting to know the chain of command.
By any chance, do you think France would call for an investigation of this?
Well, France will call for an apology, and a formal one would be better than a subdued private one. And I think apologies are needed. And then, of course, France and the United States need each other too much. They will remain close friends and ally. But this will leave a little scar. And this was, to say the least, unwelcome.
Dominique Moissy, the senior advisor to the French Institute for International Relations, speaking with my colleague, Sarah Williams. Here in the United States, Alabama State Governor Robert Bentley ordered the Confederate flag taken down from outside the Capitol Wednesday after last week's South Carolina church massacre of 9 blacks renewed the controversy over the Civil War symbol. Governor Bentley called the presence of the controversial flag a distraction from major issues and that lowering it was the right thing to do. South Carolina state legislature will debate taking down the flag from State House grounds. That after Governor Nikki Haley said earlier this week it should be removed. Governor Haley said that while many in her state respect the flag, others see it as a reminder of a brutally oppressive past. The 21-year-old white gunman who allegedly murdered 9 African Americans inside a Charleston, South Carolina church last week is an admitted racist who's been pictured holding the Confederate flag. The flag and the issue of race is becoming part of the 2016 presidential campaign. VOA's Jim Malone explains.
Speaking in Missouri, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton described last week's tragedy in Charleston as an act of racist terrorism perpetrated in a house of God.
I know it's tempting to dismiss a tragedy like this as an isolated incident, to believe that in today's America, bigotry is largely behind us, that institutionalized racism no longer exists. But despite our best efforts and our highest hopes, America's long struggle with race is far from finished.
Clinton said the Confederate flag is a symbol of the nation's racist past and should not fly anywhere. The alleged shooter, Dylan Roof, posed with the flag, and the South Carolina legislature is now considering removing it from the state capitol grounds. Many Republican presidential contenders also condemned the Charleston shootings, including former Florida Governor Jeb Bush.
It just breaks my heart. I know it breaks your heart as well. And we need to find ways to bring love back into our society.
Bush and several other Republican contenders applauded South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley's call for the flag to come down. Dr. Ben Carson, the only African-American in the Republican field, said the Confederate flag should come down, even though he said he understands both sides in what has become a divisive debate.
I want to stop that. I want the American people to realize that we're not each other's enemies.
Other Republican contenders said it was an issue for the people of South Carolina, including former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
But for those of us running for president, everyone's being baited with this question as if somehow that has anything to do whatsoever with running for president. And my position is it most certainly does not.
The massive national and international attention on the Charleston tragedy and the renewed focus on race, violence, and guns in the United States suggest those issues will continue to resonate in next year's presidential campaign. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
The nation of Israel is no stranger to drought. The small Middle Eastern country has endured water shortages for decades. The western U.S. state of California is in the fourth year of a drought. So, the Sacramento Jewish Federation organized a conference to expose Californians to what Israelis can offer in terms of technology, knowledge, and support. Jan Sluzer has more.
Water is an essential commodity that I believe can bridge between nations.
Elon Adar is director of the Zuckerberg Institute for Water Research at Ben-Gurion University in Israel's Negev Desert. Adar says he believes that water should be a shared resource. That's why he wanted to attend this conference about how Israel could help California weather its now historic drought. The idea for the forum was sparked by Sacramento's sister city relationship with the Israeli city of Ashkelon, says Jewish Federation President Barry Broad.
We thought, given California's water situation, we're in a very serious drought, and Israel's advanced technology in this area, this would be the perfect sister city event to plan. Bringing experts from Israel to tell us, you know, what are the things that we can learn from Israel's longer and more extensive history dealing with life in a permanently arid climate.
In California, hundreds of thousands of people pay a flat rate for their water, the same price no matter how much water they use. Adar says Israel treats water differently. There, it's a national commodity with a value like oil and gas, governed by Israel's Water Authority. The more you use, the more you pay.
In my country, when I buy a unit of water to my house, I pay for the water as a commodity, I pay for the transmission, and I pay for the treatment of the water released later on for my house. And I think this is the key for success.
Israel has 5 desalination plants online, and more than half of the water for its households, agriculture, and industry is artificially produced. Sivan Cohn with the technology company Ayeka says another reason Israel is able to manage the crisis is that it monitors every drop.
Israel has 8% non-revenue water loss through their water infrastructure, as opposed to lots of other states and countries. California is around 16% to 30%, depending on the location. Some countries are as bad as 40 to 60%, so that means that they're losing about half of their water, never makes it to the end user.
California has yet to get its water crisis under control. A desalination plant near San Diego is scheduled to come online soon. Meanwhile, Governor Jerry Brown has called for a 25% cut in water use statewide, and a bond was passed in November, setting aside money to help achieve long-term water sustainability. Adar says the biggest obstacles to solving California's long-term water problem may have more to do with politics than technology. Thirsty cities in the southern part of the state often demand fresh water from the north be diverted south. For VOA News, I'm Jan Sluzer in Sacramento, California.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new is the winner of the DARPA Robotics Challenge, Team South Korea. The contest, sponsored by the Pentagon, is an effort to develop robots that may someday help when catastrophe strikes. Gil Pratt is with the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
This is really about trying to make robots effective for helping first responders in emergencies, particularly when there's a disaster, that you can make the disaster less severe.
This robotics contest in Pomona, California, was an idea born from the rubble of the 2011 meltdown of the Fukushima nuclear power plant in Japan. Here's Gil Pratt.
If robots had been available back then, they could have gone in there and made the disaster much less severe.
The South Korean team won $2 million, beating 22 other teams. But all the robots are still too undeveloped to be effective when it comes to helping first responders in disaster conditions. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grosshans.
Simon Cowell's The X Factor television show brought them together as competitors. Now they are working side by side and about to release their third album. David Byrd and Larry London tells us about the four girls in Little Mix.
You might have seen them on The X Factor. You might be familiar with some of their other works, but they've got a new song out called Black Magic. They're a girl group known as Little Mix, and Larry London joins us in the studio. Larry, Little Mix started out as not as a group, but as individuals competing on The X Factor.
You could call them the female One Direction. Same story for One Direction. Simon Cowell discovered a bunch of solo artists that didn't make the cut, put them into a group, and then bang, they became very successful. So that's the story behind Little Mix. They were once known as Rhythmix, but now they're Little Mix, and they're coming out with their third album.
Now, this song, Black Magic, I watched the video for this, and they kind of played up, you know, it's four nerdy girls in college, and then they discover this book of incantations or whatever. Suddenly, they become, like, super hot, sexy pop babes, you know, like, it's really kind of comical the way they transform, you know. But one thing I noticed in this, the music in this particular tune reminded me of a lot of pop songs. Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody, Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun, even like Hold On by Wilson Phillips. Now I'm really going back in the
You're
day.
You're digging, Dave.
I'm digging deep. But, you know, it's just kind of like you're listening to the tune and all of a sudden these little things are going, wait a minute, my musical memory is pinging.
Right.
Is this formulaic, do you think? Or do you think it's just all pop songs kind of have several common elements to
it? Well, it's good that you asked that because it wasn't intentional effort on their part to try and recapture the 80s sound. That's what they were going for, the 80s sound. And so they were very successful, obviously, with the artists and the songs that you just mentioned. That's right on target.
Well, now, an interesting thing I found out about this group, too, is that they actually wrote the song that Britney Spears and Iggy Azalea have on the charts, which is Pretty Girls.
Pretty Girls. Not doing too well.
But it's not doing too well, but they wrote it.
Yes, and they're very talented songwriters. In fact, they wrote this song that's featured on their new album that it leaked. The song leaked. It was supposed to come out in May. Or actually, it was supposed to come out in July,
right?
But it somehow leaked on the internet in May. So now the record label is stuck with a situation, so they're putting it out now.
Mm-hmm. So anything we can look for from the future of these girls? I mean, you mentioned One Direction. In One Direction, some of the guys are going in different directions.
Right, right.
But these girls seem to be in it for the long haul, right?
And there's an ironic twist to this, because Perry Edwards from the band is engaged to Zayn Malik from One Direction.
Who left One Direction.
And she was the villain, the rumor. Why he left was that she was jealous and he wasn't spending enough time with her. And so then he left and they're together and they're happy and they're getting married. But, you know, there was a connection there between those two artists beyond just being on the X Factor.
All right. Well, that's VOA's Larry London. You know, you can always contact Larry on Twitter. That's at VOA underscore music. If you want to hit us up here on International Edition, that's at VOA underscore IE. You can find Larry doing border crossings by going on to our website. That's www.voanews.com. That's where you'll have all kinds of interesting folks to talk to, hear from, hear their music from, and just check it out.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. Check out our website for all the latest news and information at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to the State Department's annual terrorism report, in 2014, weak or failed governance continued to provide an enabling environment for the emergence of extremist radicalism and violence, notably in Yemen, Syria, Libya, Nigeria, and Iraq, said U.S. Ambassador at Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism, Tina Cadenow.
We're deeply concerned about the continued evolution of the Islamic State of the Iraq and the Levant, ISIL, the emergence of self-proclaimed ISIL affiliates in Libya, Egypt, Nigeria, and elsewhere, and tens of thousands of foreign terrorist fighters who are exacerbating the violence in the Middle East and posing a continued threat to their own home countries.
Although al-Qaeda's star continued to fade as its central leadership has been weakened, it nevertheless still served as an inspiration to its affiliated groups, including al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which operates in Yemen, al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, or AQIM, al-Nusra Front in Syria, and al-Shabaab in East Africa. Terrorism is a global phenomenon, and no country can fight it alone. The year 2014 witnessed a powerful regional and international mobilization to counter ISIL that halted the group's initial advances in Iraq. The adoption of UN Security Council Resolution 2178 in September 2014 constituted a significant step forward in international efforts to cooperate in preventing the flow of foreign terrorist fighters to and from conflict zones. And to counteract ISIL's spread, the United States is forming partnerships such as the Counter-ISIL Coalition. Today, that coalition consists of over 60 contributing partners, working not only to stop ISIL's advances, but to halt the flow of foreign terrorist fighters, disrupt ISIL's financial resources, and counteract its messaging and undermine its appeal. Partners in North Africa and Asia also took steps in 2014 to strengthen their counterterrorism capabilities through new laws and the development of other means to identify, interdict, and prosecute foreign terrorist fighters and those who support them. Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates have all enacted legislation or regulations in 2014 to address foreign terrorist fighters. The United States and its partners will continue to battle terrorist activity, mitigate underlying conditions conducive to the spread of terrorism, beef up border security, and strengthen weakened institutions. We are intensifying our efforts because this is a battle we plan to win.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4.